Now it is my privilege and my pleasure to introduce our speaker for today, Mark Forker, whom you've already met. Has been the executive director of the Willamette West Habitat for Humanity since 2007. Mark grew up in Washington County and received his bachelor's degree in business administration from the University of Oregon, his MBA from Portland State. And he and his wife, Linda, live in Beaverton. And as you know, he has a big sister and a little brother. Mark is going to talk to us this morning about the theology of the hammer and what it means to be part of Habitat for Humanity.
Thank you very much. It's just an honor and a privilege to be here. I think I'll organize my talk into maybe four broad areas. First will be Habitat's mission and how it works, because I get a lot of questions about it. I know everybody's heard of Habitat for Humanity, but sometimes I find that there's some misconceptions about, you know, people giving away houses or giving away money, so I'd like to set the record straight there. I'll talk a little bit about this idea that we're founded on, which is the theology of the hammer and how we bring communities together. And then finally, just wrap up with some of the work that we're doing here on Portland's West Side. And I have to say, I'm going to ask for all your help in helping me tie in some of our principles with your principles, the seven principles. I see some pretty direct connections, but I'm going to ask for your help. So don't feel like you can't raise your hand and say, Mark, that ties in beautifully with number one or number seven. That would be very helpful to me. So I've got some prepared text, but it doesn't mean we can't meander off into the Ethernet. I enjoy that. So Habitat's mission, and I hope one of your seven principles jumps right out at you as you hear this. We are putting God's love into action by bringing people together to build homes, communities, and hope. We believe that everybody deserves a decent place to live. This, I hope you notice that we put in bringing communities together up front in our mission statement, as opposed to building houses. I think that's an indicator of how important we think it is here at Habitat for Humanity to bring people together from all walks of life. Frankly, if all we were trying to do is build houses, we could do it with a lot of professional labor and frankly do it a whole lot faster and efficiently. But the point is to bring communities together to build these homes. We could be serving meals. We could be, improving some other aspect of our health system. But with Habitat, it's shelter. And that is what we do. And we bring communities together in order to do that. And I think that aligns very nicely with several of your seven principles, in particular, the inherent worth and dignity of every person. I mean, when we say we believe everybody deserves a decent place to call home, if you can't see that in your seven principles, then I'm probably done here. So how does Habitat work? Well, volunteers, as I mentioned, do most of our construction. And the point is to give people an opportunity to do hands-on work as an expression of their belief in helping other human beings. Of course, it also helps to keep our costs down. And as I said, the houses are simple and decent, so they're volunteer-friendly for construction. When they're completed, they're sold to needy families who must invest 500 hours of free volunteer labor helping us to build these homes. We don't require any down payment, and we never charge interest because we believe that you should not profit on the backs of the poor. These new homeowners then make their monthly no-interest payment back to Habitat for Humanity, and we put it together with new donations and what we call a fund for humanity that we then use to build the next generation of houses. The fact that nothing is given away is very important to Habitat. We believe strongly in this soundbite, a hand up, not a hand out, but what we have found is that the stigma of charity is removed by pride and ownership when these families are working side by side with our volunteers who are out there living their values. So that when the time comes for them to buy the house and start making a mortgage payment and start making a property tax payment and pay homeowners insurance and all of that stuff, normally people don't find a lot of joy in that, but our families take great pride that this home hasn't been given away and they don't have to feel like they're on the dole or for some reason the neighboring community should feel like, well, that's the projects. You know, that's affordable housing, and those people, you know, they've been given something. It's a pretty good deal getting a zero-interest mortgage, but the fact is that these families work very hard through their sweat equity to get the opportunity to better themselves. So that's a little bit how the program works. Any questions about that before I move on? Yes, ma'am. Oh, absolutely. So we'll get to that. Yeah, I don't want to jump to the chase. But, yeah, we'll talk about, at the end, how people can get involved with us. Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
How are the families selected?
Great question. So I'll talk a little bit about that. But the short answer is they're selected based on their need, their willingness to partner, and their ability to repay that zero-interest loan. Again, it's a big part of what Habitat does. All are welcome. So, you know, you don't have to be a Christian to qualify for a Habitat house, even though we're an ecumenical Christian ministry. Yes, ma'am.
So
how do Habitat families put in those 500 hours of sweat equity and hold a job? Yeah, well, it's not easy. Which is why I think through the Great Recession, we had very little trouble with our families keeping their houses and making their mortgage payments, even though they were probably struggling more than most anybody in our society. They work very hard to get these houses. We have a family, Lena Santos, who immigrated here from Guatemala. She's been in the country 20 years, but works over at New Seasons not far from here. She adjusted her work schedule so that she could start at 5 a.m., get off at 1 p.m., and she would then go to our ReStore and volunteer from 1:30 to 5:30 every day. So she was getting in 4 hours every day of sweat equity, in addition to coming out on her day off Saturday to volunteer. So they work very, very hard, which is why they have so much pride when they get to the point where we hand them the keys and they get to start making that mortgage payment, and they don't feel like there's a stigma of charity around what they've done. Yes, sir.
Just an estimate around figure of what the typical person would pay per month?
Sure. Well, in fact, it's... That's a great question, because when we structure our house sales, we actually do things kind of backwards. When most of us go out to buy a house, we go to the bank and we get qualified for a mortgage and they tell us how much money we can borrow. Okay? We go to the family when it's time to make the sale and we calculate their monthly income and we figure out how much they can pay. And we guarantee them that they'll pay no more than 28% of their monthly income towards housing, including their principal payment, their insurance, their property taxes, and any HOA fees. So that's the way we calculate it. And in fact, as their income goes down, we serve families that make between $20,000 and $38,000 a year, basically. And the closer you get to 20, the lower that percentage goes. It floats between 23 and 28% because we recognize a family of four making $40,000 and a family of four making $20,000 typically have the same food costs, the same clothing costs, same gasoline costs, which hits a lower income family harder. It's a greater percentage of their household income. Yeah. Yes, sir.
Does Habitat for Humanity also do remodels as well as new construction?
Yes, we do. Not to a great extent. We found that building a new house is almost cheaper than trying to get into a fixer-upper and trying to deal with all of lead-based paint and asbestos and some of the things that you find in some of the older rehabs that are out there. But we do repairs for homeowners. low-income homeowners, and it's a new program that I can talk about maybe after the service. Okay, one more question, and then I'll never get to my theology of the hammer. Yes, ma'am.
Just throw out another principle.
Yeah.
Justice, equity, and compassion in human relations.
There you go.
Yeah.
Thank you, Sarah. Thank you very much. So the theology of the hammer, that's really the foundation of where Habitat was founded. We believe that the differences in theology, politics, philosophy, despite all of that, there can be agreement around a hammer, the instrument of a carpenter. We are so divided on so many levels. And I think we're all painfully aware about how one of the world's great religions, Islam, is being hijacked by barbaric extremists. And even within Christianity, there are huge divisions. You've got liberal versus conservative. You've got evangelical versus mainline, Catholic versus Protestant. There's no agreement on communion or how often to take it or what it means. Christians can't even agree on how preachers should dress, their gender, their marital status, their sexual orientation, or even what they ought to be called. Can you call them preachers? So the list goes on and on, and frankly, Habitat's founder, the late Millard Fuller, who was a devout Christian, he found these divisions shameful. His vision for Habitat was a nonprofit with a mission where a broad range of people could come together and agree on. And he concluded that there was no better concept, no better idea than providing one of the most basic human needs, shelter, and utilizing a tool that has so much significance, this idea of the hammer. And of course, that appealed greatly to Millard's faith. Jesus employed a hammer in Joseph's carpenter shop in Nazareth when he was a boy, and of course, a hammer was the instrument that was used to bring his time on earth here to an end. Even in considering who would be served, Millard was adamant that there be no divisions. I mentioned all are welcome, and I talked a little bit about how the families are chosen. Habitat believes that God's love is universal. It knows no bounds. It's mentioned often within our circles that the only criteria when Jesus fed the multitudes was that someone be hungry, nothing else. One time a woman asked Millard Fuller if she needed to be a Christian in order to qualify for a Habitat house, and Millard's response was, no, all you need to know is that God loves you, nothing else. Sometimes the families that we serve remind us of this true meaning, this theology of the hammer. 2 years ago, I was out at our Hillsboro job site, and our site supervisor came over and pointed out this fellow named Zerai, and she said, Zerai's going to be a great homeowner. And I nodded. And then she said, Mark, are you familiar with Coptic Christians? And I said, well, I was aware that, you know, they had Christian roots in Egypt, and I had heard recently that they were being heavily persecuted by Muslims in the Middle East, but I didn't know much more. And she shared with me that Zerai was a Coptic Christian. And she went on to say that not long ago, even though he had finished his 500 hours of sweat equity and really didn't need to volunteer on the job site anymore as a requirement of Habitat, he was there volunteering. He was helping work on the house of one of his future neighbors, a gentleman named Muhammad. And on that day, a couple of weeks ago at about 11 a.m., Zerai left the house where he was working, and our site supervisor noticed that he was cutting up some of our expensive craft paper. And this craft paper is what we use to cover the wood in our Habitat houses before families move in to keep the floor from being damaged. And he was cutting them up into these little 3-foot by 4-foot squares. And our site supervisor said, well, Zerai, why are you doing this? That stuff's pretty expensive. And he said midday was approaching and that his brother Muhammad and his family would need to pray. And he was fashioning some makeshift prayer rugs. That's the theology of the hammer. We have a family that lives in one of our houses from Iraq. And they purchased a home from us last year. The father, Cesar, lived in Baghdad in 2006 during the conflict and acted as an interpreter for our troops, even to the point where he would go out on patrols with our GIs, and he would be in what he called battle rattle, full battle gear and helmet and a little microphone to talk to the lead guy and tell him if he saw something that looked a little dangerous, and he also acted as an interpreter. He knew it was risky because he was working with the horrible infidels, so he always wore a mask. Still, somehow, somebody found out, and his father was assassinated as a result in retribution. And long story short, he ended up fleeing with his wife and infant daughter to Syria, which at the time was actually stable, and he was able to immigrate to the United States. So at one point, I asked Caesar if he was a Sunni or a Shiite. I was just curious. Those were the two main factions, in addition to the Kurds, that were really involved in that conflict. And he would only say that he was an Iraqi. He wouldn't tell me. And it occurred to me that Caesar understood this whole theology of the hammer even better than I. I mean, you would think that somebody who had their father murdered would be very bitter and want to self-identify, but he chose not to. He said, you know, the differences aren't important anymore. So in bringing communities together, Habitat is, while unabashedly Christian, we're not a church. We do strive to be servants of churches, and in fact, all groups that profess love and dignity for our neighbors. Some congregations we find want to simply teach the word and save souls, and not that there's anything wrong with that, but Habitat believes that true religion is more than just singing and talking. Action is required. As I mentioned to the kids, we hope that faith communities will not just teach their beliefs, but also put those beliefs into action. There's a famous story in Habitat about a church in Cartersville, Georgia, that was well known for its outreach, feeding the hungry, helping transients, even giving away electric fans during the hot Georgia summers to families that were too poor to afford air conditioning. And once someone called a neighboring church and said, "Are you that church that helps people?" And the church secretary replied, "No, that's not us. They're over on Cherokee Street." Habitat wants all congregations to be that church over on Cherokee Street. And we want to be a conduit for the practical application of everyone's beliefs, regardless of who you are and what you believe. Another famous story within Habitat was about a Jewish couple from New York that called Millard Fuller and said, "We've read your books, we love what you do, but we're Jewish." Millard said, "So what? Jesus was a Jew, all his disciples were Jews. Bible tells us that God has a special love for Jews. They're his chosen people. I hope you'll come and join us." There was a pause, and then she said, "Well, there's one other problem. We're also Republicans." Millard said, "Now hold on just a minute. God didn't say anything about Republicans. Then again, he didn't say anything about Democrats either, so I still hope you will join us." And they did. It turned out that they owned a construction company, and it turned out that they got very involved, not only in New York, but in Georgia as well. I've seen some wonderful examples of faith communities coming together here locally to work with Habitat for Humanity. They form unique partnerships. For example, Bilal Mosque is out in Aloha, and Neva Shalom Synagogue is not far from you in southwest Portland, and they formed a unique partnership around Habitat for Humanity. For the last 5 years, about four times a year, they get together on a Sunday, and they spend a half a day volunteering together around Habitat. So think about that. You've got a mosque and a synagogue coming together and helping a Christian nonprofit. That's the theology of the hammer. So I'll talk a little bit about what we're doing here in Beaverton, and then I'll close with a quick story from Romania, of all places. So we have 24 townhomes that we're building in Beaverton right off of where Denny Road and Hall Boulevard come together. I love that location because you've got a mosque where the old grandma's table used to be. You've got a Presbyterian church across the street, And you've got Beaverton Church of the Nazarene just about two blocks down. And then you've got 24 Habitat homes under construction. So obviously volunteering around the construction part of what we do is readily available. And trust me, you do not need to be handy. I've had people say, I don't know one end of a hammer from another. Doesn't matter to us. We're not interested in speed, although, you know, obviously you want to get things done quicker rather than later. But somebody that doesn't know anything is very welcome. We have teachers out there that will teach you what to do, whether it's how to drive a nail to hanging sheetrock or whatever it might be. We also have volunteer opportunities at our ReStore if construction isn't your thing. We have a ReStore in Beaverton. It's kind of a wholesale retail environment. And they're always looking for volunteers. And, of course, we have committees. The work that we do would not be successful without a lot of volunteers that serve on committees that help us select the families, help us mentor the families while they're in our program. The building committee helps us make these houses as well-built and energy efficient as they can be. We have a faith relations committee that Jan Weston serves on that just simply hears about what's happening in all the different faith communities throughout Portland's west side and how maybe we can get involved, like opportunities like this morning. So lots of different ways to get involved, and you can also advocate for us, whether it's something as simple as praying for us or telling your friends about it, or if you're really interested in mixing it up, we have a group that advocates for us down in Salem as well, and we always have some sort of an initiative that we're working on. So let me close with Romania. My wife and I were actually in Romania as part of Habitat's Global Village ministry. You can actually pay your way to travel with a group of Habitat volunteers and go work with the ministry in a third world country. And so we were in Romania in something that they call a big build. Once a year, they invite volunteers from all around the world to come and build eight houses in 5 days for eight local families. It was quite a project. It was what I call the anthill effect. We had 200 volunteers crawling all over these eight houses in this one location there in a city of, called Bacău in northeast Romania. So this is a big deal in Romania. It generates a lot of publicity. And in fact, they actually had celebrities there, which none, of course, I recognize, but local celebrities, you know, kind of their version of The Voice and things like that were there. And they also had an interviewer from their version of National Public Radio. And he was there interviewing a guy named Clive Rainey. Now, Clive is famous within Habitat circles as being one of the very first people to volunteer for Habitat way back in 1975. And Clive was trying to explain this concept of volunteerism to the interviewer, and it's a concept that, frankly, people can find difficult from former communist countries, because to them, this idea of work without pay starts to look an awful lot like, what, communism, right? So the interviewer said, Clive, who is paying all of these people? There's 200 people here. Who's paying them? And Clive said, no one. They're all volunteers. They're working for nothing. And the interviewer said, well, these people must know the families that will be living in these homes. And Clive said, no, until Sunday, when we all came together, we were all strangers. Clive let this sink in for a moment, and he said, this situation's a lot worse than you think. He says, these people are not only here working to build these homes for people that they don't know as volunteers without pay, but they paid their own way to come here to work for nothing, including a group that I am with that came all the way from Oregon, which is on the west coast of the United States. And the interviewer said, why would they do that? And Clive said, without missing a beat, because we believe that God wants us to do things like this for one another, to express love in tangible ways. Habitat likes to say that every house is a sermon, and I think that interviewer got the sermon that day. So when you visit a Habitat site, I'll encourage you to just take a moment, close your eyes, and listen, because you'll hear the hammers. And that's the sound of hope. And maybe people everywhere can put aside their differences and poverty housing can be eliminated from the face of the earth. Thank you very much. I really appreciate your time.
We can ask questions and make comments. We'll do as many as we can.
Thank you. You mentioned townhouses, and as a lot of people can't even afford homes, even middle-class people now, are you turning maybe more to townhomes and things that don't require as much land and maybe not as big?
Well, I'd like to say we had a lot of influence over kind of the specific types of housing that we build, but through the Great Recession, one thing I tried very hard to do is take advantage of a buying opportunity. Land was on sale, and when I first started at Habitat, it wasn't. Things were very expensive, but there were a lot of developments that got started and then had failed, and frankly, through the Great Recession, I think we bought about 65 lots at four or five different pieces of property, and some of them we were locked into whatever the vision and the approvals were for that site. So we're building townhouses right now because it's kind of our preferred method, but it just happens to be what was started there, and by started I don't mean they started building them, but they had the street in and the infrastructure was in, so the die was cast in a lot of ways. Ideally, our families prefer detached houses, I think, like everybody, but it is a way to keep the cost down, keep the land costs down, keep the price of the home to the families down. So that's what we're working on right now. And I have to say, everything in the future, everything that is in our inventory, the land will all require attached housing, owner-occupied kind of townhome-style housing.
Hi, this is just a quick story. About 20 years ago, I was stationed in Idaho Falls, Idaho, with the Navy. And I got some of our sailors involved in a Habitat for Humanity project. It was really something. It was wasn't probably much different than what's going on today. It's the Habitat for Humanity has been around for quite a while and done some great work. But interestingly, the couple that they found for the house was Hispanic, and their names were Jesu and Mary, who had nowhere to lay their head, so they now had a home. So.
Hallelujah.
I was just wondering, you mentioned a kind of income bracket earlier.
Yes.
Does Habitat do anything for people who are under that $20,000 bracket?
Well, we pray for them and we try and coach them up. You can apply as often as you would like. So if a family is just short, we tell them, you know, here's the goal, here's the minimum, and we try and get them there. But no, below that, if they're a homeowner, of course, it's a different story. We have a repair program that will help them stay in their homes. We recognize that there are a lot of seniors that are struggling to age in place, and maybe they've lost a spouse and need a little help with gutter cleaning, house painting, yard work, and of course those are great youth projects, so that's something that we do. But I'm afraid not. That's just for another nonprofit to minister to. Jan, did you have
talk a little more about a brush?
Oh, okay.
We've got about 2 minutes, and okay. So let's...
I'll tell you all about the house painting program we have in the coffee room downstairs, if anybody has any questions.
Just that's a good idea.
Yeah, and we've got some brochures.
Thank you for your presentation. I just wanted to say to the congregation, we recently donated 10,000 board feet of lumber that is in the resale shop.
Right.
Unitarians have a long history of working with Habitat. The church downtown has some regular activities around that, and that may be something that we would like to start as well with our congregation.
Mm-hmm.
One more. We gotta get...
I was a Habitat volunteer for 2.5 years, and for whatever reason, not once did I hear the concept of Christianity or God or religion, but I'm very glad to hear that your organization is involved. What I'm curious about is, when did it start? You started in 2007,
mm-hmm.
and I'm assuming it was going on before that time. Is that right?
Yeah. Willamette West was founded in 1988, and actually Habitat was founded in Americus, Georgia, back around 1974 or 75. And it's a very flat organization. We're like a bunch of hamburger franchises out there. You know, frankly, few of us could get together and go up to, say, Vernonia and start one up if we wanted to. It's a lot of hoops to jump through. But they purposely set up a model that would allow for growth, quick, fast growth, as well as local control. Building is a lot like politics. It's local. You've got local materials, local styles, local climate, local building inspectors, building codes. So we've been around for 25 years, but Habitat's been around for, you know, 45 plus years, I think.
Mm-hmm. Mark, thank you so much. And I know that there'll be lots of folks who want to have coffee with you.